The following is an interview with William H. Marumoto, M-A-R-U-M-O-T-O, staff assistant in the White House Personnel Office. The interview was conducted by Susan Yowell on August 23, 1973, in Mr. Marumoto's office on the third floor of the old Executive Office Building.
Briefly outline your responsibilities on the staff and talk about areas which you would like to talk about in a more in-depth role as the project, which would not be begun in time in the President's office. We don't feel like right now is the appropriate time to go into depth on matters that are still very much in the works. So our questions are very, very basic. And anything that you would like to expand on now, we would be happy to have that too. I know that you share an alma mater with the president. How were you recruited for this job yourself?
Well, I guess I go back to the 60 campaign. Well, let me go back even further. When I was an undergraduate at Poirier College, the president was then vice president. And he was sitting by the president his senior year, and I was my senior. So the president of the college at that time, who was the president's history professor, introduced us. And, you know, it was a casual kind of relationship that existed over the years. But in 1960, 62, and 68, I took a leave of absence to work on campaign staff, primarily in California. And then fall of 69, I came back to HUW on Secretary Finch's staff. And in the fall of 1970, I came over with Fred Mellon to set up the first executive recruiting group that the president had during his first administration. The first part of it was really sort of a personnel operation with fellows who really didn't know too much about the executive recruiting principles that's used in recruiting senior management executives, you know, in the corporate sector. Those same practices.
Can I interrupt you
sure.
for 1 second? I think the air conditioner is going to pick up on this. Probably no. Thank you.
At that time, fall of 70, I guess we had four of us on the staff, plus Fred Mellon, because he had some other responsibilities in the personnel area. And one of them was a gal by the name of Barbara Franklin, who had a responsibility for appointing women to high-level positions. I, in turn, under the umbrella of appointing, you know, recruiting individuals for cabinet, sub-cabinet positions, had the responsibility for appointing all minorities, primarily blacks and Spanish-speaking. In last spring, or the first part of last year, I then wore a second hat, which was that of coordinating campaign in terms of Spanish speaking on a national level, and that was my role here at the White House. And I worked for Chuck Colson, and I in turn had a counterpart at 1701. And then right after the election, I went back to my original job of recruiting and doing it up to this point.
Has your title remained the same
yes.
throughout this time, staff assistant?
Right.
Why don't you begin with your work back in the fall of 1970 when you were helping Fred Mallon set up the personnel
office. Samples of...
Well, of how you went about setting this up. And you might mention, too, I know there had been some efforts in the early staffing by Harry Fleming. Had he left by the time you came?
He was just in the process of leaving. I think he went in the private sector and then came back to 1701 and in some capacity there. Now, when we came over, we had a sort of a patronage operation under Harry Fleming. We in turn maintained that, but then overlaid that with this recruiting capability that we never had. I was one of two original members of Mellick's group that came over that fall and had sort of administrative responsibilities of setting up the reference library and the offices and the furniture and so forth. And we were first housed at New EOB. The other members at that time were Frank Rocco, who was also on Secretary Finch's staff in a brief capacity, Bill Zook, who came to us from a private firm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Barbara Franklin. Oh, and I might add Dick Ferry. Dick was with us only for about 5 months, which was prearranged thing. He was taking a leave of absence from his position as Executive Vice President of Korn Ferry in Los Angeles, which is a recruiting firm. And subsequently, we have had changes in terms of personnel, and I guess I'm the last of the original group.
Right.
For your information, some of the positions we were trying to fill at that time, I vividly recall the Environmental Protection Agency, where the president had just appointed Bill Ruckershaus as the administrator. And I did the original search on the deputy, and the person selected was Bob Fry, just recently resigned. And I think 4 out of the 6 assistant administrators. And I also incidentally had the responsibility for all appointments of the public affairs types for departments and agencies. This would be the number one person. I think it was a real concern on the part of some of our senior staff people here that the number one public affairs officer was not cutting the mustard in departments and agencies. So we really had quite a wholesale turnover there. I'm trying to think of some of the other positions. Generally speaking, we would be involved in appointments of anybody on the assistant secretary level and above, plus the commissioners of the regulatory commissions. Plus, I also had instantly the recruiting responsibility for the White House staff. We recruited people like Des Barker, who was one of Colson's chief assistants.
Right, when you mentioned public affairs officers, I wonder if you
worked
with him.
At that time, he wasn't quite on yet. And I think maybe at the tail end, I was helping. And I also got involved in recruiting some of the senior people over at 1701, such as Pete Daly, who became the advertising director, Bob Teeter, who became the opinion research expert, Bob Morgan, who was the direct mail, top direct mail guy, Bob Merrick, who was the administrative guy. Who else? There were Alex Amadaris, who was a Spanish speaking man. Those are some that come to mind.
Were you more involved in placing people in positions or in finding people with a talent?
See, ours was a little different operation than the patronage. There, you would have individuals that were given priorities to place the department or agency on various levels. In our operation, the cabinet officer would give us a list of vacancies on the assistant secretary level and above. These would be specific positions. We, in turn, then would start basically from scratch, looking for qualified people for that specific job. But political considerations really played a secondary role. So in summary, I guess, one would say that it was really professional qualifications that we were looking for. I think if you would take a look at some of the appointments from the fall of 70 till prior to the election, there were some very, very highly qualified people who were not placed there solely because of political considerations.
You were always looking for someone for a specific job.
Right.
Rather than, I know that Mr. Fleming had done some work in just building up a bank of people, talented people,
sure.
And that this was done, one means of doing it was with just writing to people in who's who.
Sure.
You didn't do that kind of a search.
We did put together a talent bank, but it was not done through mass lists. In other words, I recall one instance where we were looking for senior management types who had line responsibility in a major corporation or a big operation, so that we could place them in certain kinds of management positions during the tail end of the first Nixon administration and the beginning of the second. So that we had quite a reservoir of people there, but it wasn't by looking at who's who or some other listing and taking them out, you know, just because they were listed, that kind of thing. These were highly qualified individuals.
Did you work through one of the people in the personnel office who was assigned to particular departments or agencies?
We worked hand in hand with them, yes.
Did you work with any particular one more than others, or was it just depending upon the need?
Depended on the need. Now, we in turn overlaid their efforts too, because we would deal directly with the cabinet officer or the sub-cabinet officer, finding out, for instance, once we got a job, more about it, kind of individual they were looking for, what the time frame was, the expected of the individual, just everything about the job. And oftentimes the liaison person didn't even go with us. And that has changed during the second administration, because Jerry Jones replaced now and is operating in a different way. We played a primary role in terms of appointing people.
Who made the assignment, so to speak, of what positions you were going to recruit for when there were positions open? Who determined what recruiter?
Well, Fred Malik implemented a system where each department agency would have to submit on a monthly basis what high-level jobs became vacant, for that matter, even Schedule C jobs. He then would prioritize within that department which ones had to be filled by our efforts here with the recruiting, and would make assignments to each of us. Generally, that was the pattern. There were times when maybe one person was overloaded with, you know, a number of responsibilities, and you would then have someone else do it. I think one of the interesting things that he set up was the fact that, for instance, I had the minority and public affairs types, generally speaking. We had Bill Zook, who had all the legal positions. I can't recall anybody else where they had a specific area.
Oh, Barbara Frank.
Right,
yes.
Barbara Frank, sure. But it was sort of categorized, and I think it worked out very nicely, because we in turn had to develop contacts within those areas, really a network throughout the country, so that we could pick up the phone, get quick response in a matter of days.
Well, when you knew that a position was vacant in a department, were you looking exclusively for people who would fall into the minority category?
Not necessarily.
Fill that position.
Not necessarily. That was just one of my responsibilities, but that wasn't always the case. IPA's a good example. I don't think at the senior management level they only appointed one minority. So what I'm saying is, in that case, you know, I wasn't even looking for a black or a Spanish speaker. It really depended on the situation. Incidentally speaking of the Spanish speaker, I think at the time that the president came into office, there were only about six who had ever been appointed to high-level positions in all previous administrations. And by last fall, he had 51 appointed to presidential and secretary positions throughout the executive branch. And a lot of them, you know, were there for the first time. Policy making roles.
Did you have frequent contact with the cabinet committee?
Oh, yes. Worked very, very closely. See, during the campaign, Bob Finch had the responsibility for policy making in terms of Spanish speaking. I had the day-to-day operations, which included not only the recruiting of Spanish speaking to high-level positions, and also the President's 16-point program, but also in terms of the total communications program as it related to the Spanish speaking, speakers, the surrogates program that we had put together, thirdly, in the grants and contracts area, we try to monitor what organizations in the Spanish-speaking community got that, and that really related to the re-election. And what else? Well, also we had any special activities. For instance, when President Chavira of Mexico came to visit the president last June, we were asked by Chuck Colson to put together some ideas on what the President of Mexico might do during his week or so to stay in the States.
Were you involved in a policy, in a policy-making level in areas which involve the Spanish speaking? Obviously, there's going to be some input in policy when you're talking about personnel, sure, staffing. But as far as legislation or executive activity in general,
well,
were you?
Mr. Finch, of course, had the lead there, but we would always tie into his operation so that there was that interchange, but he had the primary responsibility. And we would have a secondary one, but we did have some input in terms of policy as it pertained to the Spanish people.
Did you meet regularly with Mr. Armendariz?
Armendariz, right. We had a weekly meeting of Alex Armendariz, Henry Ramirez, who was chairman of the cabinet committee, Carlos Conde, who was on Herb Klein's staff, Tony Rodriguez, who was my deputy. So those four plus myself would have meetings, I believe, every Monday afternoon to determine our progress during the campaign. There were times when others would sit in on this, such as Bill Rattigan, Colson's staff, Ray Hanslick, who was Mr. Finch's deputy, one or two others who occasionally would drop in depending on the issue or the agenda.
What was the general purpose of these meetings?
I wanted to keep each other informed of what we were all doing because we each had various responsibilities and really to monitor our progress in terms of the campaign. We would have meetings here.
Did you also work closely with Robert Brown's office?
Worked with both of them, even before Stan took Bob's position. This was when he was at Klein's staff. And there was interchange with both of them. And I guess where we really worked the closest was in terms of the grants and contracts area from Office of Minority Business Enterprise and Commerce and also SBA. And I also worked with them in terms of black appointments. In other words, I'd get suggestions from them or else they would have some input as to some of the candidates that they might like to see appointed. So both of those fellows work very, very closely.
What about outside groups which are advocates of minority groups?
Yes.
In frequent contact?
Right. Probably worked the closest in the Spanish-speaking community with the League of United American Mexican Citizens and the American GI Forum and the National Economic Development Association, which are probably in the Puerto Rican Forum, and there's one other Puerto Rican group in New York. There were probably half a dozen that I would classify as national Spanish-speaking organizations. Those we worked the closest with. There were other regional groups or state groups that we also worked closely with. Those were the primary power structures in the Spanish-speaking community.
Was this mainly to recruit people who were qualified for government positions?
That plus federal programs in terms of grants and contracts. In terms of communications, by that I mean made sure, for instance, if a Spanish speaker got appointed to a high-level job, that they would publicize it in their household, or that we would get some of these people as speakers for their national or regional conferences and conventions. So there were a lot of interfacing with these people.
Did you ever make or write option papers for the president or make recommendations as to meetings that he should have with members of these minority groups?
We submitted probably close to 40 schedule proposals during the past year for the president and other members of the First Family. I believe Dave Parker's office would have a record of those.
And these were just to gain publicity and contact with the Black Citizens.
This is primarily the Spanish speaking. We did it before the campaign and a few afterwards. To give you one example, that photograph there next to the president is one where we had just the presidential level Spanish speaking appointees in the cabinet room meeting the president. And he took about an hour of his time that day, which was last October, to talk to these people individually and ask them. There were other smaller meetings where the president maybe met with some of these people individually. We tried to get him to one of the national conventions, but his schedule was such that he didn't make it.
Could you describe your responsibilities under Mr. Paulson during the campaign? Or, first of all, what period did that cover when you were working?
I believe that was from January through November. And as you may know, he had responsibility for all special interest groups. And they found out I had grown up in the Chicano section and spoke Spanish. And also because of my PR background, I got shifted over temporarily just for the campaign. And had the responsibility for anything to do with Spanish speaking. Communications and recruiting, surrogates program, grants and contracts, special events, and to some degree the policy making area, working in conjunction with Mr. Finch. So I was sort of the chairman of a little ad hoc committee that was comprised of, I believe, five of us. Armendariz, Ramirez, Conde, Rodriguez.
The people that you mentioned earlier.
Right. Met beginning sometime the first of the year on a weekly basis, went right through November. And I might mention that Armendariz was the one that really put together strategy in terms of Spanish speaking. We focused in on, I believe it was six or seven key states. California with the Chicanos, Texas with the Chicanos, Illinois with the Chicanos, Puerto Ricans, and Cubans, New York, and New Jersey with the Puerto Ricans primarily, and Florida with the Cubans. So that's what six states is. And there were other states that were sort of secondary states, such as Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico. Western states. Our primary effort was really with those six states that I mentioned. So we programmed all kinds of activities and publicity in those areas. For instance, we might send Phil Sanchez, who at the time was director of OEO, in to speak to some group, tying in press conferences, drop-ins, receptions, all kinds of things to get the maximum publicity in a short period of time. I think the crux of the thing is the fact that in 1968 the president only got about 8-10% of the Spanish speaking vote. He probably overall tripled that last year. The gains were just fantastic. A lot of it because of the one, the fact that even though the Spanish-speaking traditionally voted Democrat, they saw for the first time tangible results in terms of some of their own being appointed high-level positions. Secondly, in terms of so many federal funds, contracts, and grants going to the Spanish-speaking community. Thirdly, I think just a genuine concern on the part of the president appointing having a viable program for the Spanish
community. Were you continuing during that period of time as a recruiter as well?
Yes, but our priorities were rather low at the time because we were concentrating so heavily on the campaign itself. There were a few appointments we were still making, but very few. I think things really slowed down by the summer in terms of full-time appointments. The last one I recall was Rodolfo Montejano, who got named to the ICC as commissioner. Other than that, I really don't recall any others.
Were there other special projects that you worked on while you've been here?
Another one that's really comparable to Spanish speaking was the Asian American community. And I did tried to do a lot of things there similar to what we were doing in the Spanish speaking community to get their votes during the campaign.
This was campaign directed again.
Right.
Did you work any with the domestic council?
To some degree. Not as it related so much to the Asian community. Just in the fringe kind. Jim Cavanaugh for one, Jeff Shepard, Jim Falk, Dana Mead, Ed Morgan. Now in some instances it was only a one or two time thing, others, you know, continuing discussions. The same with some of the people over at OMB. Really, I just a couple times got involved with Dr. Kissinger's staff, very few times.
In what respect were you?
Well, I recall something to do with Cuba one time. We had to get a position that we were to take on a particular issue related to Cuba. I just can't recall the details. I think another time there was something relating to Japan. Again, I don't remember the exact detail. I think that was one of the fun things about this particular job was it was this interfacing with a number of people, not only here, but departments and agencies. I guess because we're wearing so many hats.
Did you work with any particular departments more than others, say HEW possibly?
Probably HEW more than most of the other, HEW, SBA, Commerce, Labor, those were the primary ones. I'm relating that incidentally to just the Spanish-speaking Asian community.
What about?
Across the board, in terms of recruiting, I think I probably have done some recruiting for every single department of agency, but no particular emphasis on any.
I know that you were recruiting particularly for Spanish-speaking or black community. Did you also recruit for other minority groups, Indians, for instance, American Indians?
I don't recall any American Indians that we recruited.
Or were you involved in any of the minority problems that, say, Mr. Garman's office worked on during the Indian problems in the last time? Years.
I think that Brad Patterson was the person I can recall.
Was there someone else on the recruiting staff who was designated for minorities other than Spanish or black?
After the election, there was emphasis in terms of ethnic appointments. that was sort of across the board on the staff. There wasn't, sort of the House expert. There was an all-out effort to get more ethnics appointed to the High Level Commission. I'm talking about Italians, Spanish. Or some of the other European countries.
Lithuania is part of the campaign. Did you work at all with Mike Balzano?
Yes.
And in what capacity?
It was a unique situation because he had the ethnic responsibility and I had the Spanish speaking. We would sit in on meetings. There was some interchange, but it wasn't a close relationship. Compared to, say, Alexander Norris and myself. So we were really talking about two different ballgames.
There was a very close coordination between the White House and the Committee for Spanish-speaking people.
And that same principle, I think, is applicable to any other special interest group that we had organized here, working closely with 1701. It was supposed to be.
Did you attend any of the regularly scheduled staff meetings that Mr. Folsom had?
These were only the ones for these special interest groups. It wasn't the special name we had for it.
The 715 meetings?
Yeah.
During the
campaign? Wasn't right. Wasn't
you did that. Not attend those?
This was just the special interest group. We try to call weekly meetings on that.
With that documentation of your activities, would your recruiting files, first of all, be fairly accurate reflection of what you did while you were on Mr. Malik's staff?
I think so. The way we organized the shop, we had a chronological file, and then we had a subject file, so that there would be those two reference points. I think for the first 2 years, I think those files, particularly the chronological ones, are now in Central File. And some of the subject files are down there too. Others we've kept here in the recruiting files. But there should be a pretty good, all of it should be there. Same with what I did for Colson.
Would that be in Mr. Colson's files, the Central files, or you
he
didn't
should, he should have some, because I made a weekly report to Colson and Malik as it pertained to the campaign. He would have a file, I don't know what he's done with it, and we would have one here, a Crown file plus subject file.
During the campaign, were you more interested in policy areas or in were you more in the area of public relations or in?
Let me see if I could word that another way. I think our primary thrust was to make the greatest impact in the Spanish-speaking community, whatever way we could, to get the most support from the president. So I think policy came into it, but also there was a lot of public relations type activities that came into play. The important thing is that we're trying to make as big an impact as possible wherever we concentrate. A good example is whenever we sent one of the high-level appointees to speak in a particular city. That was one way. We were generating not only speaking engagements, but feature articles in magazines, newspapers, but also getting these people on talk shows on both radio and TV, conducting press conferences, making sure that organizations that had house organs would also have some in their newspaper, newsletter.
Did you do much speaking yourself on behalf of?
Yes, I spoke probably a couple times a week to either Spanish-speaking, I guess let me backtrack, Spanish-speaking, Asian-American, and other groups on various matters. And I think all of those speeches are down in the cave fall, central fall. There, you know, central theme of the president's done much for all minorities.
Are there any particular projects that you worked on that you feel may have been more significant than others in a historical perspective, which is rather difficult to have right now, but which you feel you should talk about in more depth or a history project, particularly considering the documentation which does exist in the files?
I think if one were to take a look at the laundry list as it relates to Spanish speaking, the fact that the president appointed so many to high-level positions, it's quite a feat, really a relatively short period of time. And that certainly is open for a lot more discussion. These people, for the first time in the history of our country, got involved in policy-making positions. One, in high position themselves, but secondly, where they were controlling programs and people. They never had that opportunity. I think that, in my opinion, made as much impact as anything else that the president did during the first term.
Is someone already been chosen to replace you or to cover these areas?
In terms of policy-making responsibilities, Ann Armstrong replaced or assumed Bob Finch's role there. But no one has really taken over the role that I had. I think that it's showing because we haven't been making too many appointments so far. You know, citing that as one case. I don't know what Mrs. Armstrong plans to do there. I think
you and Mr. Finch shared a lot of interests and areas. How frequent was your contact with him?
With his staff, I would say on a daily basis. With Mr. Finch, it might be twice a week kind of thing, you know, where I saw him face to face. Maybe on the phone occasionally, but in terms of his staff, that's what I really...
Of course, you said that you would work with him at HUD.
Right. I was on his recruiting staff there.
Were you in the same kind of a position there as far as recruiting for minorities?
No, it was just in the broad category of recruiting. No focus in terms of minorities or women or other special interests in it, just across the board. You might be interested to know that Fred Malik formed the first executive recruiting group on department level. He did this at HUW. He brought that same principle here to the White House. We had three professionals on the recruiting team.
That would be Hamilton James?
No, he came on about a year ago on the staff here. He was only with us for about a year, all of them here at the White House.
Were you involved in the restaffing or reorganization for the second term as far as reviewing the positions which were vacant as well as those which were carried over?
To some degree, right. And then us, you know, carried it a step further, recruiting people for anticipated vacancies and actual vacancies. But there were a number of people involved in terms of evaluating the incumbents.
Were you in that group of evaluating? Was this for particular departments or?
Across the board.
Across the board.
This generally meant from the assistant secretary level on up to the undersecretary.
Would that also be documented in your files?
I think Fred here, Malik, has all those files.
Where are you going when you leave the state?
I'm leaving August 31st, and we'll be hitting up a marketing business consulting firm to management with offices here in Washington and Los Angeles. We'll be basically involved in three areas. One, U.S.-Pan-Asia trade, which has to do with putting together joint ventures, acquisitions, licensing agreements. Secondly, in the service contract areas, which means full maintenance of buildings, both private and public, both inside and outside. And thirdly, in the government relations public affairs area, really being communications consultants to institutions and corporations, both domestically and internationally.
Do you have a permanent address where you could be reached? Do you think over the next 10 years or very often a family address is the most convenient?
Well, here in Washington, it would be 1019 26th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20037. The phone number is 965-4863. We're still legally registered in Whittier. The address there is 6521 South Painter Avenue, P-A-I-N-T-E-R, Whittier, California, 90601.
90601.
I don't have the office addresses yet.
What is the name of your firm again?
Well, if we can get through the corporation people, it'll be called The Interface Group Limited.
What about your immediate staff? Who has worked directly under you?
Tony Rodriguez, during the this past year and a half, he left in May 31st this year. He was my deputy. Cut across the board in terms of some of the responsibilities I described, particularly during the campaign. And my first secretary was Dottie Moody, M-O-O-D-Y. She went back to a career position in HEW. And then Jenny George replaced her, who's still with me.
Which one of your secretaries would be most familiar with your files?
Well, Jenny's still here, so she probably would be. They're both quite familiar with Jenny, of course, would have up-to-date knowledge.
One of the other things which you'll find that when you get your resignation papers and so forth, you'll receive a form from the staff secretary's office, which has to clear through just about everyone in the complex to make sure your pass has been turned in and parking sticker or whatever, and we are on that list. Because obviously, as the planning staff and the Nixon Library, we're concerned with papers. Just the White House staff manual outlines the definition of presidential papers and the disposition of papers when you leave the staff. What it really is saying is that the files which are created by the president's staff while he is in office are considered his personal papers. And we ask that everyone fill out a statement of where their files have gone, whether they've gone to central files or special files, or if they gone with other staff members.
You want that? You want me to do that now?
Yeah, for your convenience. It doesn't really matter. Was there anything else that you would like to add in terms of special assignments that you had while you were working on the staff, or areas again that you think should be talked about in more depth at a later time?
Well, I think that probably Fred Malik would be the best person, but I think that the process of recruiting people for high-level positions is very important, I mean, from a professional point of view, because I think it takes a lot of some political considerations that often go with appointments. And he really did put together a very sophisticated program there.
Has your job changed significantly since Jerry Jones has headed up the personnel office?
To some degree, I don't think Cabinet is that Jerry understands some of the principles of recruiting and the way it's being done now, the caliber of people being brought in, I don't think stacks up with some of the ones that were here during the first part of the second term, if that
right.
makes sense.
Has there been a real change in the methods of recruiting?
I don't think that the same emphasis is there. The style is different from Alex. So then it affects everybody's working relationships. You know, I'll give you one example. I guess we had at least four people in recruiting, even during the peak seasons. And it appears under Jerry there only be two. Point in the high-level positions, and just can't de-emphasize the numbers. For instance, we don't have a woman recruiter, and we haven't had one since Bobby Franklin left to join the Consumer Safety Products Commission. And there won't be anyone really concentrated on minority appointments.
I feel that there's a need to have someone in each of those areas to keep up with what's going on.
Of the impact that the president's going to make on women's movement. And this is part of it. I think that Barbara did a fantastic job in her first term. And there could have been some long-range implications if we could have kept up that momentum. And the same thing's applicable in the minority area. We made very few black appointments. And maybe 10 or so appointments from the Spanish community, which really doesn't say too much. I think as I look at the 76 elections, I have some very strong feelings that we need to keep that ball rolling. And I don't mean that from an advocacy point of view, but from practical politics.
Well, thank you very much.